Hey everybody, welcome to Hit Rewind. This episode, we're kind of catching up on some older stuff that we missed out on, and that is the, we started doing these spy Bond movies, 4 years ago, maybe?
Something like that. It definitely was before I moved out to St. Louis, Arizona.
Yeah, maybe 3 years ago, I can't remember. But it was before COVID, so it had to have been 4 years ago because it kept pushing No Time to Die back. And I remember when we were recording, we thought No Time to Die was only like a month away or something like that. Remember?
I remember it was like rumors and stuff, I think, at that point.
Because
I think we were talking about like, oh yeah, I think we've heard that, you know, such and such might be directing or something like that. Because I don't think it was like Danny Boyle. I think we had actually had Cary Fukunaga as tapped at that point.
Whatever it was, a lot of stuff got pushed back and delayed, and then we just kind of forgot about it, so we're kind of catching up on stuff. We never did the new Star Trek movies, the new trilogy. What do you call it, the Kelvin trilogy, I think is what it's called.
The Kelvin timeline.
We kept thinking there was going to be a fourth one, and it kept getting pushed back, so we just never got around to that. The Bond movie kept getting pushed back, and like, well, the Dungeons and Dragons doesn't count because we didn't even know it existed at the time that we did the trilogy. But stuff like, the MonsterVerse, remember we were holding off because we were waiting for Kong versus Godzilla, and somehow we just never made it back. So we're just kind of playing catch up right now with some of the stuff we left hanging. Hey kids, it's also the 10th year of our podcast. Not Hit Rewind, which is what we renamed it 4 years ago, but it originally just Retro Rock Entertainment through the years. And John, you've been with us, 6 years now?
Something like that, yeah. It's been a good while.
Because we started off doing comic books, and then you slowly moved over to doing the movie stuff. And then we started adding on to that, too, like, you know, the comic books, the music, and things like that. So thank you for all the years that you've given to it.
I am bowing in front of an imaginary audience.
Oh, the fame and fortune. Huzzah, huzzah. All right, so No Time to Die. I did see it on video when it first hit video, because I'm not going to theaters anymore. I'm basically done. But I forgot almost everything about it except the end, and I went back and revisited. And here's the thing about a lot of James Bond movies. Sometimes I don't know what's going on. Like, it confuses me sometimes, the motivations or plot. Still, I have no idea what Octopussy is about. I'm not even going to give it any more tries. There is a thing in this movie that bugs me to no end, and it's the assassin. What's his name? Swan?
Safin.
No, Swan is her name. The girlfriend.
That's her name, yeah.
What is his motivation for taking out Spectre?
There is no idea. I did actually think about this after watching. He has no reason to do this, and I mean, they'll do this plot, and this is way jumping ahead of my notes, but it's like, he's going to use his bioweapon to kill millions of people, and he has this villain speech, and it's a whole lot of nothing about people wanting oblivion and bullshit like that. And, you know, I mean, come on, ransom the world at least, Jesus.
Yeah.
But,
He's not interested in money. He's only interested... he's a zealot. I mean, you've seen it in some other movies before where they think that wiping out a massive amount of people is going to be the cure for the world or whatever it is.
Okay. I guess there is his family were Spectre's poisoners, and his family died. That's kind of where he's at least going after... He was going after Mr. White, and that's the motivation for that.
Okay.
I guess hanging on to the grudge to... wait until the problem is, it's like, why is it now as opposed to any other time? But this actually felt like it should have been Javier Bardem's his Skyfall villain.
It feels his story. That's the thing, is that it feels like it's a replication of that villain. I feel like they were just taking notes from whatever worked in the previous four films and said, okay, well, this is a smushing of all those ideas.
Yeah, it's like, it should have been, it's like, it would make sense that he's going to steal this bioweapon from MI6, who's been developing it, and then use it against Spectre, wipe out all Spectre, to show M, show Judy Dench, you know, how much of a, you know, how serious he is and how much better he is at doing Judi Dench's job than she is.
Yeah.
I was like, there's a lot of stuff there, but that would make more sense than what we end up getting.
Okay. I'm going to let you lead this episode since you actually took notes. I'm sorry.
Well, it's like, there's some interesting stuff in this film. Like, again, it is Daniel Craig's final thing, and it's kind of weird that this film exists because Spectre does kind of end. You kind of get an ending, and if you were, quote-unquote, to continue the series, it would basically be, should have kind of been like an Ouroboros, and Bond's next, you know, next thing would be Dr. No or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of feels like that's kind of where that would have cycled into. And instead, we have this whole thing where he gets there, he and Swan are going off to Italy, and they're going to have a good time, but he is Bond, after all, and trust is not his thing, and so even from a jail cell, Blofeld's able to fuck up Bond's life, and it ends up having, you know, costing him a happy relationship. And that opening, there's a couple of opening segments in here that are pretty boss, like the actual film's opening with Safin attacking the white residents is really fucking creepy.
Yeah, yeah. I think the whole fight, I think it's weird that it takes almost a half an hour, maybe more, to get to the opening credits, which I think is the longest they've ever taken. And that whole opening sequence is amazing. The motorcycle jump is stunning. And you know that was practical effects because of the way the physics.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this. I'm not particularly pleased with the Billie Eilish song. I don't dislike Billie Eilish, but God, that song is boring as hell. Now, granted, it does come from a melancholy, you know, melancholy scene and is a melancholy song. So thematically, it's fine, but it's not a song that I could ever find myself listening to outside of it being an opening title sequence. Yeah.
Well, again, it feels like it belongs with Skyfall. I mean, I feel like Spectre doesn't even exist with this movie sometimes. It's just they're trying as hard as possible to continue right after that.
Yeah. Ironically, that's actually in my notes, is I almost think that Skyfall's theme should have been this film's theme. And, you know, there's things happen. I'm not going to go to it. Bioweapon is stolen. Bond, not working for MI6, is actually hired on by Felix to go and help out. And Jeffrey Wright crushes this film. Like, he's what, not even what, 5 minutes of screen time, and he owns every single moment that he's given.
Yeah,
and it hurts that they had to kill off Felix in this film.
Didn't they kill Felix in second Dalton movie. What is that one again?
No, if I remember, he lives. It's his wife who gets killed.
Oh, okay.
If I remember right, he doesn't die. He's alive at the end.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know why I thought, are they just changing out the Bonds all the time? See, it's very confusing because they keep the M's and Q and Moneypenny when they change out the Bonds. But they also switch out Felix all the time, so it's almost as if it doesn't even matter. This is the only chunk of Bond, really, that flows. Well, I guess there's the two or three movies with Jaws, where it shows you there's continuity between the movies.
That's always been the thing, is the Bond films don't really have a continuity except for when they do.
Yeah, it's weird, because Blofeld kept changing all the time during Connery's time. Yeah, it's one of the most confounding franchises, because, well, then again, they do that with Batman, because remember they switched out Kilmer and Clooney, and...
But he kept Alfred.
Yeah,
So Alfred was the constant, like, the constant thing through those films.
Yeah, and Commissioner Gordon. But it's interesting that they had another 007 in this movie, that they've moved on. They didn't just retire the number, it's like a sports team. It's rare that they retire a sports team number or whatever. Not the same name, but the same number. And I wonder if any of those hard right people have lost their fucking minds. Like, it can't be another 007. It's just a woman.
No doubt. If I remember right, I think people did. They lost their shit over that.
Well,
because
they also...
I mean, they needed to, because that's the only thing they can do. Their lives are so fucking empty.
Well, they lost their shit when Bond was blonde. I mean, I remember that. You can be Kevin Moon and poop my pants.
Now, Ana de Armas's character in this, Paloma, I fucking want to see a movie with her character.
Oh, yes.
Like, she is just that... I don't know how much of that is supposed to be a joke and or lie on the character's thing, but it's like, yeah, I've had like a week's training, sort of, you know, sort of like, you know, yeah, I'm a new agent. And then she has this huge fight scene where she's kicking the shit out of people. And now, I was watching this with Heather, and she actually took issue with this moment in the film, because she's doing all this shit in this sheer dress, and not once did her boobs pop out, or she didn't trip on her dress. You know, I told her it's super secret spy clothing. You know,
it's like the John Wick clothing, that it's so paper thin yet somehow able to deflect a bullet.
Well, I mean, shit. Well, I'll do a Marvel thing. They're unstable molecules. There you go.
Yeah.
Reasons. It didn't work. She didn't buy it.
Nope. And she is correct.
But yeah, the MacGuffin in this thing is a DNA nanobot bioweapon, and you genuinely have to sit there and go, well, that's the stupidest fucking thing you could have made. there's absolutely no way that this wouldn't have been stolen by someone and used for bad things.
Yeah,
there's,
absolutely.
Nothing about this thing is practical for any sort of use other than doing terrorism. So, yeah. But yeah, things happen, and this movie's long. But yeah, Spectre gets wiped out, and I feel really bad for our Blofeld in this one, because he's really not given anything to do, and then he dies.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the surprise. You did not expect for him to, you know, get killed so quickly.
Yeah, it really is a, you know, disappointing use of our... Why can't I think of his name? Feeling really bad.
Oh, Christoph Waltz.
Yes, Christoph Waltz is... I love him and stuff. And he's so just pointless in this film.
Yeah, I think they were trying to throw you. It's like, oh, is he back? No. Like, I don't know what they were going for.
But the problem is you don't really... As creepy as Rami Malek is in this film, and, you know, what he... You know, like, his weird unhinged nihilism and stuff, he makes for a better henchman than an actual villain in this. And that's kind of the problem, is we're just kind of given this, you know, I don't want to say a cipher of a character, but yeah, just, he's not much of a character. He's just kind of there. You get motivationless, and...
Yeah, I didn't think he was interesting in any way whatsoever. I was so bored.
Yeah, it's like it would have been nice if either he had more, you know, something that he really wanted, or he was just someone's henchman. Which, come to think of it, we didn't get Dave Bautista back. He kind of was set up to be the Jaws-like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And as much as they threw him from a train in the last one, if I remember his final scene right, he seemed to get thrown from things quite a bit. It almost feels like he should have been back in this.
Yeah, it's Dave Bautista. He can fall off a train. Come on.
Yeah, I feel like we missed something here. But yeah, ultimately, being that this is the last Bond film, they fucking kill the last Daniel Craig Bond film. They fucking kill him off, which I think is the biggest surprise of this film.
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, DNA weapon, it's a thing that you can't get rid of. So the second that this thing, that you're infected with it, whomever you come in contact, that is the thing that it's targeting, it's going to kill them immediately. And he gets one for Swan. So not only is the woman that he loved, you know, potentially a target if he's anywhere near her, but they have a child.
and
that
she would
didn't
die
know
too.
About.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, so there's a big jump, which I forgot about the first time. I wasn't paying attention. I was like, oh, did she have a child this whole time? And then, oh, that's a very strange thing too. Is that they don't really.
They don't really tell you that there's a time jump. You just kind of, you have to infer it from what
right.
from things being said. And it's like, yeah, there's like this, what, 5-6 year old child? So I'm like, well, I think it's like 5 years, so I think it's like
yeah,
a 5 year old child.
I think they took a little more risk with this one because they knew Daniel Craig wasn't going to come back, even though he said that 3 times already, I think. I feel like after Quantum of Solace, he's like, yeah, I'm not doing any more of this. I'm like, well, you have a contract for one more. Ah, shit. So then they had to offer him like $50 million or something insane for this one. MGM is broke. I don't know how the fuck they're able to afford any of these movies. So you know the next Bond they're going to have to sign for like $1 million.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious what they're going to do with this now that we've had a 5-film run that is its own continuity. You know, how are you going to work on this again?
Yeah, are they going to make acknowledgement of his character, of his James Bond, and say you get the mantle of James Bond? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
It's also weird that we're in an era now where legendary characters are dying off. Iron Man, Han Solo, James Bond, don't tell me any others because I might... I might not know yet because I haven't caught up in a lot of new movies. Yeah, Indiana Jones fell into a wood chipper. Son of a bitch!
Oh, you didn't see the new Indiana Jones?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm so far behind.
Oh, okay. I did. I know I mentioned it, but I would have been curious to see what Danny Boyle would have done with this film.
With who?
Yeah, Danny Boyle.
Oh, I think it's Danny Glover. I was like, what the fuck?
Oh yeah, Danny Glover was going to be Bond at one point.
I'm getting too old for this shit, man. Can we talk about Q? How fun his version of Q is. I've always loved Q, but I really like the new one.
I don't hate his his version of Q, but I also don't particularly like that he's just this twee, you know, dude. He just, I don't know, something about it just...
Well, isn't that what Q always is? Is some kind of nerdy little just because he's skinny now? Oh, you mean because he's like a hipster doofus?
Yeah, he's a hipster doofus as opposed to, you know, someone who, you know, seems to be like an actual inventor who's, you know, doing weird shit.
Oh, thank God they finally started bringing some gadgets back into this. And the gadgets are good. They're not stupid.
Yeah, it's not ridiculous stuff. They're very, very simple, you know, stuff. I mean, you have, I think the most outlandish, aside from the car, which still is a throwback anyway, is that plane that is also a sub.
Yeah, that, I thought that was pretty cool.
That was a cool thing, and he has like an electromagnetic watch, and I think that is literally the extent of the gadgets in this film.
Yeah, he takes out that guy's cybernetic guy. What does the cyborg guy do again? I cannot remember.
Oh, it was a camera.
Oh, that's it? So people can just watch him? Okay, all right.
Yeah, he was able to, like, record video and stuff, because that's how they find some stuff, is he's using the eye as, you know, doing playback on it.
Gotcha, okay.
But, yeah, and no, that's it. Actually, the dude with the eye, he was an interesting character, even though he didn't have a whole lot to do, but he was a fun little, henchman character that you immediately, because of the eye, recognize. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, bad guys. You know, cool, neat.
The villains with the interesting little whatever. See, that's the thing is they have two villains with a weird thing. You know, like some weird facial feature or some weird way they carry themselves. They did two in one movie, and I thought that was a mistake.
Yeah. As I said, I think at the end of the day, we're both disappointed with Rami Malek's character. And we think that it just should have been Skyfall. Everything should have just been Skyfall.
There was some other character. He was the blonde, good-looking guy that you thought that was going to be a hero. Oh, Billy Magnussen. I've heard people say, he has a face you want to punch. And I get it. He's kind of fun and it's ridiculous. Like, have you seen Game Night?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's so good in Game Night. But he has that kind of look, like douchebag look. And he does a good job with it. But it does throw you off. I did not expect him to be a villain. Did you catch that?
I didn't. That was a nice little twist, but then for a film that's over, you know what? It's not 3 hours, but it's close enough.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you would think that everything would come together better.
Yeah, well, to tell you the truth, they probably could have cut his character out. Probably could have cut a lot of the boat sequence out or whatever, and taken Felix. If they're going to take Felix out, they should have done it at a different place and kind of condensed it down. I feel like every movie needs to be 3 hours long, and no, it doesn't. I would be shocked to see a 90-minute Bond movie, just one clean adventure.
Well, honestly, we had a 90-minute Bond movie. It was Quantum Solace, and it sucked.
Was it short? Okay, shit, I didn't remember.
Yeah, I think it was like an hour 40, but still okay. Close enough. You know, it's the shortest.
Still costs $250 million. These movies are so expensive, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and it's like, and I get it. If you're gonna do Craig's last film, you want to make it an epic, quote unquote, sized film. But there really wasn't the content for that. If you're gonna do something big. Don't spend a lot of time where we're in rooms where just a handful of people are talking, and then, occasionally we get a fight sequence or that car chase out in the middle of the was it Norway, I think?
I don't even remember it now.
But it's just kind of like, okay, yeah, there's this car chase that somehow bad guys get ahead of our heroes, even though they really don't know where they are. And only just then found them. It's kind of like, You either need to set this up better, or you need to spend more time, establishing what everyone's looking at in this film. Anyway, it's not the worst ending that we could have had for this one, but I don't know. I think it's too long for what they really gave us.
Right. How would you categorize, like, 1 to 5? What would you, from best to least?
Okay, if we're doing the...
all five films.
His films?
Yeah.
Skyfall, number 1. Casino Royale, 2. Let's see. Actually, I guess then it'd be this one. No Time to Die would be 3. Spectre, and then Quantum of Solace.
Well, I don't need to do my top 5 because it's literally the same.
Yeah, it's like, I almost would flip Spectre and the No Time to Die, but at the same time, it's like, Spectre really is forgettable. I don't remember much about that film.
You have to respect that No Time to Die at least took some risks. And advancement of the character.
Yeah, and also, there's, I think aside from the opening moment with Swan, there's technically no, quote-unquote, Bond girl in this. I mean, Paloma kind of is, but she is in and out of this film, like, super quick, and she's not there to have sex with Bond.
Right. Oh, Ava, DuVernay or whatever her name is. I can't remember her name. I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, Ana de Armas.
That's it. Anything else you want to say about this before we move on to D&D?
Like I said, her character, I would really like to see her in a thing, and I guess I will because there's a John Wick spinoff, Ballerina.
Okay, yeah. The how are they going to do that? Was she in John Wick 4 and I don't remember?
What's that?
Was she even in John Wick 4? I can't remember.
No,
that movie was so fucking
long.
I haven't seen
John Wick 4, but I said, she's not in any of the John Wick films either.
So they're just going to give you a character you've never been introduced to. That seems like a stupid mistake.
Nah. I know of what happens in John Wick, so I guess that's about the only way you really can do that.
Yeah, they should
by spinning off concepts. I mean, they have the TV show or movie that's based around the hotel.
It does feel like they should take a longer break from 007. Like, do spinoff, like 007 Presents, something like that. Some older stories, maybe like early days of M or something like that. I don't know, something different. Just let's breathe for a while before we get James Bond again. And it's not going to be a star. Please stop saying Henry Cavill. There's no fucking way on earth. He's getting too old as it is. He's going to cost too much money. They're going to go cheap unknown.
Yeah, we need someone. Well, we need to get a new actor, someone that we haven't seen, and turn them into a star. Damn it.
Yeah. I don't want to reboot story, though, of their origin, though. That's the problem. If you tell the Casino Royale story again, that's going to be tiresome. It's like Spider-Man when they did that again. I was like, I don't want to see the origin story already. It's only been like 7 years.
Yeah. All you have to do is just have, here's Bond. he does stuff. There you go.
The D&D, Honor Among Thieves, I think got hurt at the box office, not just because of Super Mario, but I think there was a bad taste in people's mouth from the previous film. I don't think a lot of people know about the sequels, but I think a lot of people do remember that one from 2000. And even if they haven't seen it, they've been told it's a giant piece of shit. And I think right now we're kind of in that area where we're not hot for Sword and Sorcery. And is D&D still a red hot property, or is it kind of tapered off?
Oh, it's a huge property. I mean, okay. Because of things like Critical Role and the like.
Now, let me ask you this, though. To mainstream audiences, though, is it still a niche thing? Is this one of those things where you can't... Well, no, Lord of the Rings wasn't that. It was pretty niche, too, and it broke through.
It is probably about as big as it's... I don't want to say ever going to get, but it's probably about as big as it's ever going to get,
mm-hmm.
which is far larger than just people playing in the basement of their parents' house or something like that.
Gotcha.
In between us recording those old D&D, that old D&D episode, and now, as I mentioned, I moved to St. Louis, and post-pandemic, I actually started playing Dungeons & Dragons again.
Okay.
So, the place that I play is Game Store. It is packed on Tuesdays with our with a thing called Adventures League, which is basically like kind of controlled play in a way. You're not everyone running their own whole campaigns and shit like that, but it's you get together, you get a table, and then you can play like one-off adventures sometimes.
Gotcha.
And stuff like that. And it's packed, and it's only gotten bigger since I've been there. I think partially because of pandemic and everything opening up, and more people just kind of discovering it.
Right. I was thinking, during COVID, probably people learned how to do it online, with friends and stuff like that, and then got a hankering for doing it in the real world once everything opened back up.
Yeah, and with this thing, a D&D group that I was playing on Sundays, a home game, we all went and saw this film in theaters. And had a great time, and it's okay, I get it, and nerds are way too defensive if they feel that something is A, being attacked, or B, not being represented right.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of stuff in this film. I mean, 100%, this film is very much, it feels like these are people sitting at a table playing a game. And I would have to say that the DM believes in the rule of cool, as opposed to being slavish to the rules. Because there's a lot of shit in this film that you can't do in the game.
Oh.
But it's, one, it's a movie. Let's start there. And two, it's a lot more fun if you have people do really cool shit instead of having to sit down and actually, you can own the druid character. Unless they're a level 20, which then why the fuck are they having a hard time doing anything in this, to do anything in this movie? They can only wild shape a handful of times, but you have a sequence where she's escaping, she's transforming all types of creatures to escape the bad guys in the castle. And it's amazing, it's a great sequence, it's fun to watch. And if you stuck by the rules, you wouldn't be able to do that, and it'd be a very boring scene. Or super tense, because you have to have the character hide a lot.
Right.
Or she, the introduction of the character where she becomes an owlbear.
Yeah, it's not very cinematic to stick to the rules. Plus, you are trying to also cater to a mainstream audience. There's a lot of... You can see the grabbing bits and pieces of things that worked in sci-fi, fantasy, genre, whatever, over the years. You're grabbing, kind of the elements of Pirates of the Caribbean, the Marvel movies, the way they're made, a little bit of Lord of the Rings, and you're trying to make... What made those so accessible to people? How can we make that work with this?
Oh, yeah. And what's nice about this film is that for all what you can do in a fantasy world, and what's... A, they do a lot of practical effects, and that's amazing. Even when the practical effects don't look great, they still look better than they probably would have with shitty CGI.
Uh-huh.
So, it's like Okay, yeah, we have a, let's see, what was the creature? Like, oh, I can't, Tabaxi, these cat people. We have our, when we get introduced to the paladin character, he's saving this young cat child who's been eaten by a fish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's all practical effects that, you know, the mother and the fish and the thing are all, you know, people in costumes and little toys and shit. But if it was a CG thing, it'd probably look really bad because obviously they did not have the budget to do much.
Why is it that this was so accessible and so critically acclaimed and loved by audiences? Like I said, it didn't do that well in box office initially because the Super Mario killed it, but word of mouth kind of kept it going instead of dropping like 70% every week. But I'm curious, like Warcraft, it got its first big audience, and after that, nobody gave a shit, and they said it was just inaccessible to people who don't know Warcraft. What is it that...
Well, it's because this is a very... where I was kind of going with that, I got sidetracked immediately, is that this is a very simple story. You know, it's like, yes, you have a sky beam at the end of the film, but ultimately, this is a heist movie. You know, it's fantasy heist.
Yeah.
Sure, you get... In a film called Dungeons and Dragons, yeah, we get kind of a dungeon, and we get to definitely see a couple of dragons.
A fat dragon, which I was surprised by.
Oh, and yes, and I will say this, 100%, two things that you get that are weirdly the most accurate portrayals from D&D. You have in a flashback, you're seeing a black dragon fly by, and it spits out acid, and it's not like, you know, it's just almost like tar hitting the ground and burning shit. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, that's probably what an acid weapon would probably look like. And then when our heroes go down to this place called the Underdark, they come across a giant chonky boy red dragon, which is called Vembershard. And yes, that is a giant chonky red dragon in the Underdark called Vembershard. I'm just kind of surprised they didn't have him speak, because he's, as much as he's a hungry boy, he's smart. He's not just, you know, I'm going to eat you. He actually does shit down there. But it was kind of funny, is that group that I was going with. We were playing at the time a game that is set in that area. So all of a sudden I'm watching some of the locations and going, oh my god, I know exactly where this is.
Nice.
Holy crap, that's, you know, it's like, I now have a visual idea of what Grekkelstook looks like.
It's a funny word.
Oh, the names down there, they made some stupid fucking names. But, yeah, but this film is a heist movie.
Well, it's also a family of misfits. Well, another thing they took from Guardians of the Galaxy, which makes it work.
Yeah, in as much as... Yeah, like you said, the sky beam. There's a villain who has a, you know, grand scheme to turn everybody into zombies that he can control, and you know he's using a villainous character to do this. But in as much as that's really the biggest, you know, goal, it's but they're still just attacking one city. And it's basically, our grand scheme is going to be, we're going to take out an entire stadium. And from there, you know, things will happen, obviously. But instead of trying to be, we're going to scour the world, Lord of the Rings, we're going to scour the world, and we're going to do this huge epic thing. It's, no, our band of misfits need to steal this object in order to stop a bad guy. And it's just, You can easily elevator pitch this movie, as opposed to whatever the fuck Warcraft was about.
I'm looking at this. I didn't realize this was such a tortured production. The rights were constantly being in court suing because Courtney Solomon's company Sweet Pea just would not relinquish the rights. I don't know how it got settled, but whatever it was, I guess. I don't really like that some people can just perpetually hold rights to something but not get anything made. Like, was it, Warren Beatty owns the rights to Dick Tracy, and the only thing he had to do to renew it was just show up on screen in some sort of way. So he would film these half-hour specials that were meant to air once, just so he could retain the rights. He just did it, like, a year ago. He's, like, fucking 90. And does he think that he's gonna, it's his ego getting in the way? And, like, Sweet Pea, look, you guys fucked up all three versions of Dungeons & Dragons. You should probably let the rights go, because no one wants to work with you, because you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, and even at the end of the day, I remember not hating the third Dungeons & Dragons movie, but I think that was also in the same case, where it was, it's a smaller focused film.
Yeah, well, the budget's kept getting smaller and smaller as it went along, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, unless you're going to go and do an epic along the lines of Lord of the Rings, in which then you have to 100% commit to it, you need to start small. You need to actually establish the world. Like, hell, in this film, I'm gonna be way too fucking nerdy. I'm apologizing to everybody, but the characters in this film, as I said, it feels like people are playing a game.
Uh-huh.
Chris Pine is the world's most shittiest bard. At no point does he ever cast a spell. He might be using his bardic inspiration to help, you know, buff his companions to do awesome shit, but at any point, no. Why the fuck wasn't he casting the spell where he's doing the illusion?
I didn't even know that's what bards did. How do bards do that? Do they do it through song? Is that how they cast
the
spell?
Yeah, their instrument is their spell cast thing that they focus through.
Interesting. I didn't know that at all.
Olga, Michelle Rodriguez. Surprise, surprise. Michelle Rodriguez plays a chick who beats people up.
Yes, but this is her best role and her best performance because
she is amazing. She is so funny and
sweet. I mean, I actually teared up when the thing happens to her.
Oh yeah, that's one of the things. You said they're like, oh man, and they set up the stakes for that very early on, and they almost do a great job of making you forget that that's there. The second that they remind you, it's like, oh shit, oh you're doing this.
Yeah. Well, I think also it was trying to tell you to fight for what's in front of you, what you actually have, instead of holding on to something you cannot get back.
Yeah, there is, like, 100%, there is a moral in this film, too. And in a weird way, don't you remember when films actually had a message?
Yeah, or had a voice? I mean, people will say this is it feels like a Marvelization. I said that, too. But I feel like also the guys who did this, they have a very particular voice that they want to. They don't want to be generic filmmakers while at the same time still making populist entertainment. You can do both. Look at Joe Dante.
Oh yeah, that's it. If I would love to see them do another film, maybe not necessarily with these same characters, but if they could maintain a similar a tone to this.
Yeah. I think that most of the characters' stories are done. But I would like to see Simon and Doric be the characters if they continue and try to form a new team.
What's kind of funny is Simon, what's his name, the actor?
Justice.
He's great. He does a great job. And I will say this, he's like the player for him is a guy who, wild magic sorcerer, so occasionally your spells are going to fuck up. To occasionally amazing reactions, like if you mess up and you have an entire table that you roll of different effects, you can become a potted plant. You just all of a sudden I'm going to shoot a fireball. Nope, you become a plant.
I didn't realize you were being literal there. I was like, is that a metaphor for something?
No. And you can't do anything, and it just lasts for, I think, a minute.
Uh-huh.
And if you get damaged, you break.
Yeah,
and you don't die, but you break, and then you turn back to what you were.
Yeah, I just feel like the sequel, the Chris Pine and Michelle Rodriguez story and the little girl, their story's done. It's time for them to move on. But I would like, the Paladin. He could be added to those three together.
Zenk, I have to say this. I'm secure in my masculinity and sexuality to say this. That guy, and I can't say his name. I really don't know how to pronounce his name, but he is one of the prettiest men I've ever seen.
Regis Jean Page, I think is how you say his name. Regis?
Yeah, Dude, that guy, I've seen him in a couple of things. You know, that dude is an attractive man.
Yep.
And he also is 100% the character the DM introduced to the story to get these chuckle fucks to get back on story.
He
100% exists to make sure that they get what they need to get.
But do you think that's where the story could go? I don't know if they should continue with the two main characters and maybe move them. They're not leads yet, but maybe they come to Zink or whatever his name was and help form a new team. And for that one movie that he's part of, he's like their leader, their guiding force.
It could be.
And then, go ahead.
I would personally just kind of like to see him just show up again and help out.
Okay. A couple of surprises in this is Bradley Cooper apparently was available that day.
Hugh Grant is playing one of the villains in this, and oh my god, he's so fun.
He is, and I'm glad that he's settling into his supporting cast era.
It's been nice to see him just kind of pop up in things in a couple of films recently.
Have you seen Game Night?
Game Night, no.
Okay,
no.
There's a sequence in Game Night that wowed me because I saw it in the theaters where they're trying to keep something away from the bad guys, and they're constantly tossing it back and forth between their team in this big mansion. And it's one single, supposed single shot. I'm sure they did some digital trickery. But it's one long, fluid, coherent shot, and they repeat it in this with her whole transformation sequence. You know, that's one all fluid movement. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, they knew that worked so well, they would try to do a different version of that. I think these guys really have a good eye and ear for how people talk, how to make things accessible. I'm really wondering what it would have been like, because they were originally on The Flash. And then they got removed or whatever, and we ended up with whatever we got. I still haven't seen it. But I'm curious what they would have done with The Flash. But then again, they wouldn't have been able to do this, probably. They wouldn't if they hadn't been fired.
I'm glad they got fired, because this is a much better thing than this is not a dig at them in any way, but I don't think they could have made a good Flash film.
No, I don't. They I really think well the TV show was already the Flash that we wanted and we knew. Well, I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, we would not have. It didn't matter who would be behind the camera on that film. It wasn't going to be a good film.
Yeah.
But some of the things, like, you know, I kind of talk about how they they're ear for how people talk works really well, especially because this film does also make fun of, like, the weird arbitrary rules of magic that are in Dungeons & Dragons. They also basically have a great joke at the beginning where they're kind of making fun of tragic backstories, because that's one of the things in D&D is, you come up with a character, you know, you have backgrounds that kind of influence how it is, and it's like, okay, here's some little points to think about while you're developing this kind of character. And then 9 times out of 10, everybody's story is some sort of really horrible thing that happened to you that led to you becoming an adventurer. And so Chris Pine in the beginning, where he's, you know, really wanting this guy to hear his tragic backstory, and he just kind of interrupts every moment. He's just like, you know, Jonathan would really, really be appreciative of this. We will decide your fate. He's busy. Yes, but.
I love the whole setup for, okay, for every false step, you got to do this. For every fifth thing, you got to go over to the left, over to the right. You go, and whatever. And then they say, just took it complete out of there, because they realize how nonsensical some of that stuff can, like, overly complicated. But also, it's too easy to just set that up. For them to take that out and have to figure out a whole different way, I thought was very creative.
Yeah, well, it's also, and again, this is also a dig in D&D, because they talk about the bridge is of gnomish design, and in the game, everything that gnomes make is excessively complicated, you know, pointlessly so. It's like everything is a Rube Goldberg device, effectively, and there's always a self-destruct button on it. Doesn't matter if it could be a broom, and the broom will have a self-destruct button. So the fact that it's a bridge, and the second that he if he merely puts a foot on it, just not even thinking that that's where the bridge technically starts, and the whole thing falls apart, it's like, yep, that's something a gnome would make.
Because
I'm a nerd.
The little cameo, I like sometimes when they do cameos, but it's not like in your face, over the top, like, okay, we got it, is the very brief nod to the old cartoon.
Oh, yeah. It's like, if you know, you know. If not, they're just fantasy-looking characters running around a maze.
Yeah. I thought that was a really great sequence, too.
Yeah, that's... And again, you're throwing all these monsters where you don't necessarily need to know what they are, because they give... You know, you are shown, you know, show not tell, what these things can do. It's like, okay, yeah, you got a gelatinous cube, you've got displacer beast, you got a mimic...
Yeah, it's like, not drowning in exposition. A lot of these movies drown in just the gobbledygook because no one knows what those words mean or they sound ridiculous. The movie Sword and the Sorcerer has this whole garbled sequence of, we have to go to Paladon to meet Galador or whatever, and you're just like, what? You guys have a Brooklyn accent. What the fuck is this, you know?
Yeah, well, heck, I mean, when we have the back, you know, we're learning where this helmet that they're... little MacGuffin they're looking for is, and we have this whole, you know, okay, we're gonna talk to the dead people and do these things. The whole idea is like, oh, okay, yeah, we're getting our exposition dumps, some of it very funny, where it's like they pick up one person's like,
oh, the dead bodies, yes,
yeah, I slipped, hit in my head, and then you gotta put, no, I died right there. It's like, wait a minute. No, that's my brother. It's like, but there's a I'd definitely tell you to go look for this. There's an outtake featuring the guy who's asked what his favorite book is. And I think, I want to say it's between 5 and 8 minutes, something like that. It's a really long bit. And this guy just goes off on book titles. And just, it's long, and I don't know if there's a cue card just off screen that's got a whole bunch of stuff printed on it, or this guy's just literally coming off the dome, but it's impressive one way or the other. Just how,
yeah, because you can't just pick, if you're improv, you can't just pick books that existed, like, in our world, you know, recently.
Yeah, and it's an impressive little bit, and ultimately in the film it's also kind of very funny because he's just, you know, he starts saying these things and it's like, wait a minute, you've only asked me 4 questions where it's 5 lets him go back to being dead. Again, arbitrary nonsense and magic.
Yeah. All right, is that it for this episode?
Yes, this, between the two films, D&D is definitely the better film, and absolutely, not just because I'm a nerd.
Yeah, well, I think it's more accessible and, frankly, not repetitive. I feel like a lot of stuff in James Bond is just like, well, we're just doing this again, okay, all right.
Yeah, there's some neat stunt work in that film, but they probably should have just left it with Spectre.
Maybe. All right, everybody, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Later.